News Radio 560 KPQ, Michael Knight telling you about an interesting event coming up at Wenatchee Valley College. Leading and local writers are going to be visiting the Grove for a writer's series coming into town. Suzanne Mattson, Ed Harkness, and also OMEC instructor Peter Donahue, all of them professional writers, all of them coming to the event to help us out in Wenatchee Valley College English Department. And on the line with me right now is Ed Harkness, a professional writer from Seattle who's joined us. And you're a poet too, is that right, Ed? Welcome to the show.
I am. Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
I think one of the greatest questions, unanswered questions in my life is, how does somebody become a professional writer? Now, we can all just sit and start writing, but to turn it into a profession, that's a trick that I don't think many people have mastered.
Yeah, it's a funny term, professional. You know, I was a teacher for 30 years at Shoreline Community College and near my home in Shoreline. And, you know, I mean, I guess I am a professional writer in the sense that I publish books and I make some money off of them, but it's pretty small.
So you are a writer. You are a writer, but you have some question in your mind about whether you're a professional, right?
Yeah.
Well, what marks?
I taught writing for many years at Shoreline, and you know, I taught creative writing and literature and English composition.
And what do you think of your students? You see some gifted people out there who still have been able to master our language?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. There's no problem there. Students are very well equipped, you know, to learn. And I loved my years of teaching at Shoreline. I really did. I had great students, and I adored my colleagues. But sure, yeah, the kids today are very adept with the language.
Are you one of those professional writers that sits at your desk with a blank piece of paper and you fill it no matter what it is, whether you use it or not, you write every day?
Yeah, that's a pretty accurate description. And it's funny you should say that, because the first poem in my book, The Law of the Unforeseen, is called Blank Page. And it's all about that experience of sitting down and looking and staring at a blank piece of paper, kind of with a blank mind and wondering how to fill it.
Are you one of these people who goes with first thought, best thought, just write down whatever comes to mind, or are you more?
Well, I am. It's always interesting to talk about how writing happens or how a poem happens. For me, it's usually, you know, a word or a phrase that will occur to me that I think sounds interesting. It might have a kind of sound quality that I like, or maybe there's an image that kind of strikes me that occurs to me. And so I sit down and write it down. And if I'm lucky, that'll be followed by other words that come. And, it's a fascinating process of accretion, where one word or one phrase will lead to others. It's kind of a beautiful it's probably a very mysterious process.
It's more mysterious from the outside looking in, I think, for people who are accustomed to getting inspiration, even if it comes from just one word or one phrase. When you hear that one word or one phrase, you know there's a whole poem waiting for you, right?
I don't often know that, you know, and honestly, I have to say that as many times as I start a poem, at least as many times, it just might not go anywhere. So it's oftentimes a matter of luck that leads to a poem. It doesn't always happen every time you sit down and start to write. But it's an exciting process and a strange one. And if you're lucky, a poem will come. But what's funny about luck is that the more you practice, the more you try at writing poems, the luckier you get. You know what I mean? It's like a sport, or it's like any activity that the more you do it, the better you get.
You cannot win if you do not play, right?
Exactly right.
Tom Robbins, the writer from Washington State, famously said to me once in an interview, I said, what makes a professional writer? Well, how do you know you're a writer? And he said, well, did you write today? If you did, you're a writer. If you didn't, you're not.
Uh-huh. There are days that I don't write, I have to admit. But
and so on those days, you're just a private citizen.
For me, it's something I've been doing, forever, it seems. I've been writing since college. And I guess I'd describe myself as not, as not as prolific as others, but I have been doing it steadily since I was a student at the University of Washington, which seems like centuries ago.
And did you learn to write at the University of Washington? What did you learn there that's helped your career?
You know, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure I can put my finger on it exactly what I learned. What I can tell you is that I got to rub shoulders, so to speak, with other writers and with some really great teachers. And I think it's that proximity, that being close to other creative people, other writers, other poets, that has the big impact. So I'm not, I don't know if I could point to one particular thing that I learned from these teachers, but what I did learn was, the importance of sitting down, like you describe, writing regularly in a journal and being faithful to that. And I think the other thing I learned was just being receptive to quirky thoughts that occur to me and, putting those down instead of ignoring them, which is, I think, what, a lot of people do. I think that might be the difference between writers and others, is that writers write things down.
Because they've learned from experience that if you don't, it'll be gone in about 30 seconds, right?
Sure. And, of course, the other thing I did learn from my teachers at the University of Washington and University of Montana, where I was in an MFA program, was from other poets, was who to read. And I think my best teachers were those who encouraged we young budding writers to read a lot. In fact, reading other poetry might be at least as important as writing it. So those are some things I learned.
In some cases, but not all cases, the style or the delivery of a poem is very sparse. There's no room for extra baggage. How many rewrites do you do before you're finished with paring it down?
I rewrite a lot, and it's funny because there have been more than a few times when I've been going through a notebook, an old notebook, and I've found some lines that I wrote that I'd abandoned, and I'll go back to them. So that's the act of rewriting. And it might occur a year, more than a year, after the original, the original draft. So you could say that in a certain sense, I've been rewriting that poem maybe in my head all that time. But I'm totally in favor of rewriting. I know that maybe not all poets do that, but I certainly do.
Well,
we write a lot.
I think people who are making their living in prose just have more room. They can fill a paragraph, and whether it's an important one or not, it can be of interest to them, and they can leave it. But a poet doesn't have that ability.
Yeah. I think it was Coleridge, the romantic poet, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who said that the difference between prose and poetry is that prose is words in their best order. That's prose, words arranged in their best order. And he said that poetry, on the other hand, is the best words arranged in the best order. I've always loved that definition of poetry.
Wasn't Coleridge the one who said, I'm going to blow this now. Oh, angels can fly because they take themselves lightly? Was that him?
That's funny. I haven't heard that. I love that. That's really funny.
So he was cognizant of the fact that just the order of the same words, one version is prose, and the second version is poetry.
Yeah, the best words in the best order, yeah.
What are you reading now that's been inspirational for you or to you?
Oh, gosh, I read a little bit of this and that and everything. Right now, I am reading the selected poems of a poet I really adore, Ted Kuger. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's just really wonderful. He won the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago, He's a poet from the cold Midwest, Wisconsin. And I've been reading his poems and just really loving them. They're just so simple and unadorned and magical. You know, he's one of those writers, those poets, who really does put the best words in the best order.
You're appearing here in...
Beth Boucher's work is somebody that I'm reading right now.
You're coming to Wenatchee to take part in the Visiting Writer Series at Wenatchee Valley College. That's on March 6th, right on campus in the Grove. Suzanne Mattson and the OMAC instructor and English and writer Peter Donahue are going to join you. What are you preparing for the FET, the big deal?
I am preparing to meet those people. First of all, I haven't met either one. In fact, I haven't met Derek Sheffield, who teaches at the college and who has put this program together. I've corresponded a lot with him, but I haven't actually met him, so that'll be one thing. But I'm preparing to read a few poems from my earlier books, but focus more on my most recent book of poems, The Law of the Unforeseen, published by Pleasure Boat Studio Press. So that's my plan, is to read with these people and to read from my new book.
And where can we get that book?
It's available. I guess the best place to get the book is online from the Pleasure Boat Studio website. And it's easy to find. That's three words, Pleasure Boat Studio. And it's a local small press. It's actually local. It's situated here in Seattle. Originally, it was started by Jack Estes, a professor at Peninsula College in Port Angeles about, I would say, 20 years ago. And Jack moved to New York City, where the press continued, but now it's back. He's retired. Jack Estes has handed the baton off to a local woman who is continuing the press.
And is Pleasure Boat all devoting itself entirely to poetry?
Yeah, no, it is not. It publishes fiction as well, so it's kind of a big umbrella press. In fact, I believe that Pleasure Boat Studio publishes memoirs as well.
We're talking with Edward Harkness. Ed, I did not ask you to do this, but do you have a poem there handy that you could read for us?
Sure, I do.
Tell us about it.
I will tell you. I'll find it first in my book here. The poem is called Tying a Tie, and it's about, it'll be clear, I think, in the poem. It's about my father. Tying a Tie. I must be 12 or so. We face the bathroom mirror, me in starched white shirt, trying not to squirm, faint frown on my face. He in sleeveless tee, his chest hair abundant, still dark, the last dots of shaving soap on his chin. He calls the knot a Windsor, holds my hands, holding the long end on the left, short end on the right, flipping long over short, looped around, poked up and over the top, tucked in, pulled down, the triangle tightened with thumb and forefinger. All simple, deft, impossible to replicate. He's not a sad man yet. I'm in training for the world, for being a man like him. Sad only when I study him in the mirror, girding for another day at the appliance store. His hands on the shoulders of his smaller self, prepping me first so I can see how it's done, how to tie the tie in a way that allows me to breathe, to not fear the squeeze of being choked. I will, just as he has, come to live with it. And so I have, now that he's gone, come to live with it, to tie my own tie, to accept the discomfort just as he did, whose reasons for sorrow were many, to love again the appliance salesman who turns me to face him as he adjusts the knot at my throat.
Ooh, at your throat. I didn't expect that ending. In fact, while you were reading that, I wasn't seeing you and your father. I was seeing me and my father learning how to tie the tie.
Were you?
Yeah. In fact, I always said the Windsor knot is too complicated. I have to learn the foreign hand, which is a much simpler knot, but there's more tie left at the end of, end of the experiment.
Yeah. I just remember my dad trying to teach me that and just not being able to figure it out.
I remember actually loving ties because they seem so adult, so dressed up, so much. That's the part that I appreciate until I learned the symbolism of presenting yourself in such a way and the pressure cooker world that's waiting for people who put on their tie and see what happens next. That's fascinating. Edward, when you come to town, I look forward to meeting you. I hope that's the case. I hope you have a successful Visiting Writers series at the Wenatchee Valley College on March 6th, and I encourage everyone to go by and enjoy themselves with an evening with professional writers talking about how they do it and what they're even maybe sometimes surprised by the results. Edward Harkness, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
My pleasure.
Great to talk to you. Bye-bye.
News Radio 560 KPQ.